Health equity strategies are not just about programs or interventions. They're really rooted in what an organization believes about things like fairness and justice and responsibility for righting historical wrongs. So when values such as justice and accountability are explicitly stated and practiced in an organization's strategic plan, and then also articulated by the senior leadership, they provide a foundation for the staff members that are pursuing equity efforts throughout the organization without alignment between values and actions, then health equity strategy specifically risk being superficial and short-lived.
Welcome to another episode of Advocates in Action, a podcast created by the Patient Advocate Foundation, a nonprofit that helps promote equitable access to affordable quality healthcare through providing case management services, financial assistance, and patient education and advocacy tools to people living with chronic, life-threatening, and debilitating illnesses. I'm your host, Ashley Freeman, Manager of Stakeholder Outreach and Engagement, and welcome to Season 10, where we get the opportunity to discuss what happens to patient care when equity and inclusion in healthcare are under threat. I'll be joined by some guests who can provide some hope to the troubling trends we are witnessing, including shifts in health policy, reduction of funding, limits on research priorities, and changes in clinical practices that threaten to dismantle hard-earned gains in health equity. Thank you so much, Reggie, for joining me as we kick off Season 10. I know health disparities and advancing equity is at the core of the work that you do. So what common ground do you suggest needs to be established before we can even dive into unpacking the shifts that we are seeing happening to equity among our healthcare system?
Well, Ashley, thanks so much for the invitation. As you know, I really enjoy talking about this topic. I've taught multiple courses focused on measuring and reporting health disparities. And foundational to that work has been making sure that the students are, you know, explicit about the words that we use in the course and how we define terms. So I think that the words we use to define the terms and describe equity are very important. In particular, conceptual clarity in this space matters. But why does it matter? I recently wrote a piece for the American Society of Clinical Oncology about the importance of conceptual clarity. In that piece, I quoted a paper by Alderic and Gottlieb. So my academic colleagues will appreciate that shout out to researchers. And they wrote, "New collaborations among the healthcare, public health, and social service sectors, each often arriving with different ways of thinking about social determinants of health and social interventions, would benefit from a shared understanding of the language being used and what it means for achieving their perspectives." Now, I've seen this in my own work, where assumptions are often made about the terms used, and especially in interdisciplinary environments, we each may bring our own, how our own field defines or describes terms. And then, of course, we all come from different lived experiences. So my experience with navigating the healthcare delivery system and social service system may be completely different from someone else navigating those same systems. So ensuring early in a project that we are clear about how those experiences are shaping how we're defining terms and thinking about the pathways that contribute to differences in health, health behaviors, and how we navigate healthcare.
So what are those real next steps after being clear about the definition?
Yeah, so I've actually developed a framework for organizations or committees, coalitions, or groups that are focused on this effort of eliminating health disparities and working towards health equity. We saw this in 2020 that so many folks were coming out saying that they were for reducing or eliminating health disparities. They wanted to work towards health equity. Many struggled with what to do next. And so in my framework, I realized that even before talking about definitions, there needs to be some sort of commitment. An organizational or group commitment to doing the work, and then an evaluation around how ready are you to do this work? And as you're going through that process, what comes out is how you are defining these terms and your thoughts and your ideas about what are the pathways that lead to these differences. It's often important to think about not only are we clear about our definitions, but are we actually ready to engage in the work? And then after you've thought about the definitions for these terms, then what specific health disparities are you going to focus on? So on my website at healthequitystrategies.org, I have a framework that lays out how organizations can walk through the process of attempting to eliminate health disparities and work towards health equity, where a key domain in that framework is being clear about what the definitions are for the various health equity related terms.
And are there organizations that you've seen use either your framework or maybe similar frameworks to really make that type of progress? What are some success stories?
That's a great question, because oftentimes people assume that this work is further along than it is. We don't have a long history in this country of funding health disparities related research. I think also academics assume that the first place that folks go to solve problems is the academic literature. And the academic literature is where most of the frameworks live.
Yeah.
And so if folks don't have access to where these frameworks are, this assumption that folks are going to actually use the frameworks, I think, is a bit sort of disingenuous. In a recent project, I partnered with Physicians for a Healthy California in a project that was funded by the California Healthcare Foundation to do a landscape analysis of chief health equity officers. And in that project, one of the questions we asked was around frameworks and whether or not chief health equity officers were using frameworks. And there were multiple frameworks that were being used from the CDC, CMS has a framework. IHI has a framework as well. So there are frameworks out there that people are applying. But again, this work is relatively new in terms of taking the framework and actually applying it in the real world context. What we're seeing now is a pullback in funding for health disparities research that I don't think is going to move us any closer to applying systematic frameworks.
Yeah. And that's one of the most disheartening parts of it, right? You're like, oh, we're actually not as far along as people think. And then there's all these attacks on the little progress that we have had and the goals that people have already planned out for the future. So with that being said, how can we strike a balance between these precise academic definitions and the need to communicate clearly with the public and policymakers about what all of this information means?
When I left my academic role, I assumed that outside of academia that we were much further along and that folks outside of academia were having very similar conversations that we were having within academia. And that wasn't the case. And so I think after an organization or group has made an explicit decision to work towards eliminating health disparities and achieving health equity, that all senior leaders or organizers should get consensus on what they mean about health equity and how they define terms. Whenever I'm giving a talk on health equity or health disparities or teaching, I always include this quote from MLK somewhere in the talk. And this quote from Martin Luther King Jr. was from a book, From Chaos to Community. And he wrote about where we were headed as a country. And he wrote, "There is not even a common language when the term equality is used. Negro and white have a fundamentally different definition. Negroes have proceeded from a premise that equality means what it says, and they have taken white Americans at their word when they talk of it as an objective. But most white people in America in 1967, including many persons of goodwill, proceed from a premise that equality is a loose expression for improvement." Now, I use this quote because I feel like it succinctly highlights how we can assume that we're all working towards the same thing because we're using the same words. In one instance, we can see that one group might be working towards the elimination of differences completely. A group might be working towards, just a slight improvement in that difference. And that has substantial implications for the programs or interventions that are developed to address those differences.
Which I feel like makes it harder.
It does.
To achieve it because it's like we think we're all working towards a common goal, but
yeah.
We're in silos, right, in some sense.
Yeah, which is why I consistently prioritize at the beginning of any effort that any group or organization is explicit about their definitions and that they encourage everyone around the table that's involved in the project to be explicit about their definition as well. Now, this is going to require a bit of introspection in terms for the individual and for the organization, but it's very important that one is clear about when one thinks about equity and disparities reduction, are you working towards a slight improvement or are you working towards complete elimination of those differences?
And what I'm hearing when you speak about introspection and making it clear what your definitions are and making sure that everyone's on the same page to me, that feels like also talking about what your values are, right? Because different organizations or different efforts have different values. So how do values both individually and organization-wide play a role here?
Well, I think health equity strategies are not just about programs or interventions. They're really rooted in how an organization or what an organization believes about things like fairness and justice and responsibility for righting historical wrongs. So when values such as justice and accountability are explicitly stated and practiced in an organization's strategic plan, and then also articulated by the senior leadership, they provide a foundation for the staff members that are pursuing equity efforts throughout the organization, or actually throughout the entire organization, even if one assumes that what they're doing is not directly linked to disparities reduction or elimination. If those values are part of an organization's overall culture, then that influences all of the roles within the organization. And I think without alignment between values and actions, then health equity strategy specifically risks being superficial and short-lived.
Superficial and short-lived makes me think of the fact that we've seen a lot of organizations, unfortunately, change their language, switch their names, drop different parts of their agenda that they once said were a priority, and not have courage in that moment, right? To stand up and truly live out those values. Yeah. So when you were saying that, it just made me think about that. But there's also the fact that not everyone or not every organization has the freedom, right, to choose courage, depending on your funding sources, or it just becomes a very sticky situation.
It does. But I think back to our conversation around introspection and really understanding what your values are and what the values are for your organization, the process of doing that introspection is often underappreciated. I recall I had a conversation with a diversity, equity, and inclusion leader who described one of the challenges of doing DEI work, which I think directly relates to doing health equity work. And I'll distinguish here between diversity, equity, inclusion work, which is generally more internal facing, working with the workforce, and disparities work, which is more external facing, focused on disparities reduction. She stated that by amplifying diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, many folks are being asked to bring more of themselves into the work environment than they previously or were comfortable doing before. Now, if you hold any discriminatory beliefs or support racist systems, this might be challenging for you. And perhaps you and the organization might need to revisit, you know, what your values are. But doing that introspection around how do you define the terms, but then also how do you think about the pathway to those differences? What are the causes of those differences? Are they individual? Are they systems level? So, you know, really thinking about why is introspection important here? And I think it's important because you need to engage in the exercise of exploring why you think disparities exist. Is it because of individual choices? Or is it about how systems shape the choice sets of people in the environment? An individual should also ask, what stories do I tell myself about why disparities exist, and what stories are told within my organization about why disparities exist? Because those stories that are being told influence the programs that are being developed, the programs that are being implemented, and how they're implemented and how they're evaluated.
One thing that we also talked about previously was the value of storytelling in trying to describe these loaded concepts. Sometimes there's power in a story to help a person identify, like, oh, this is an example of a disparity, but I would have never named it that before. So talk about the importance of storytelling and the ways that we can create visuals for people to really understand these heavier concepts.
I actually will refer to an organization that I have a lot of respect for called Storytellers for Change, where I've learned a lot about the importance of narratives and stories related to equity. And one of the key components of that organization is really highlighting the narrative ecosystem. That is, who's telling the story that's being told. What are the hidden stories? What are stories that aren't talked about at the public level, But if you're within an organization, you know what those hidden stories are, you know, certain processes. So I think stories are really an important aspect of helping us to communicate differences in health behavior and how we navigate the healthcare delivery system. And as a trained quantitative researcher, I am learning to bring in more qualitative aspects to the work that I'm doing. I worked in Washington, D.C. briefly, and I remember a saying there about statistics and this idea that statistics are people with the tears wiped away. I feel like the stories do is that they give us back those tears so that we can really understand what's behind the numbers that we are being presented with through quantitative data and quantitative research.
Ooh, I like that visual because we all have either been that person or know that person who, as soon as they see someone else crying, they start crying too. So there's power in those tears and those emotions and making it real and giving others the ability to be able to connect and humanize the numbers and the statistics that you see that otherwise could be easily brushed off. But when you add that human aspect, it's like, oh, wow, this is something that I should care about.
I agree. And something else that the stories do is they allow us to see ourselves in those experiences. For many of us that are part of historically minoritized groups, we don't often see ourselves in the stories that are told, but we're often asked to project ourselves into stories that are often told from the majority perspective. And I think something that storytelling can do here is that it can sort of widen the lens for whom we see stories in our various systems. I have been trying to center fairness in my work on health equity. I was sitting in a session that was led by the Frameworks Institute, and they encouraged us with new terms that might be politically charged, terms like structural racism, that first describing the term, then providing the term. So that is, you define it in the conditions in which the term exists. So, you know, what is the experience of structural racism? And then at the end, you actually use the term. And I think this might also help with thinking about the pathways that contribute to differences in health behaviors, and how we navigate healthcare. This is actually something that I've really started to focus on in the last couple of years, is recognizing that we don't all come to this discussion understanding all of the terms, understanding all of the pathways that lead to disparities. But I feel like something that, you know, we in academia do, we are accustomed to talking to each other about these terms. In that sort of familiarity, I think we often take that when we're talking to non-academics as well. But on the flip side of that, you often hear that when you are creating materials for the public, you need to put them at a sixth grade or eighth grade literacy level. So we understand that we as a population are not necessarily very health literate. And so because of that, I think it's important that we have conversations that recognize the various levels of understanding where people are. When I took a leave of absence from my academic role and I worked for a prostate cancer organization as their first VP of health equity, part of that role required me to not only work on the internal facing diversity, equity, inclusion efforts, but also the external facing health equity efforts. Because people were at such different levels of understanding about health equity and diversity, equity, inclusion, that it was kind of like developing a course for kindergartners all the way to grad students, but everyone's in the same class. So varying levels of understanding the importance of diversity and what does inclusion mean, and are there disparities in health across the disease continuum in which we were working? How do you do that? How do you create content for people at such a wide range of understanding? We in the health equity and health disparities research space are going to have to come to terms with, how do we communicate to people who are either just starting their health equity journey, and especially for people who have the lived experience of having to navigate a world where their lives are filled with the disparities that we often research?
That was such a great visual of having to be able to explain it from kindergarten to grad school level. And so with that, that gives the opportunity for many misunderstandings. So what are some misunderstandings about health equity that you find yourself clarifying when you're in these situations of trying to share these concepts with such a wide range of understanding and various knowledge levels?
I think two things I recall experiencing when I was teaching is that the students were always so surprised that an awareness of disparity didn't immediately lead to efforts to reduce it. That highlights that the continuation of disparities is often a policy choice and that we have to consciously make the policy choice to eliminate it. The second common misunderstanding is that this work is going to be easy and that these tasks can be accomplished within like a single fiscal year or a single funding sort of cycle. But it's important to highlight that these differences weren't created in a single fiscal year, and they definitely won't be solved within a single fiscal year.
More like decades.
Decades. And for many of them, centuries. Yeah. For many of them, centuries that these have compounded.
But how do we keep hope knowing that we are trying to right the wrongs of decades and centuries? With you specifically in your practice and your research, how do you personally keep the hope around the work that you do?
It's important to surround yourself with people who are doing this work. And so I have a small network of other folks that are engaged in this work, and we have to motivate each other. And especially during a time now when funding resources is being reduced or eliminated across the board, I will admit it is hard to remain hopeful. And my organization, Health Equity Strategies and Solutions, is a health equity consulting company that I created to address these differences. We're seeing funding sources dry up. And so this is something that definitely is impacting my hope and my positive attitude to keep doing this work. But I will say my support network around me is incredibly helpful in that we are trying to keep each other hopeful and to support each other as we work toward this very lofty goal of achieving health equity.
For listeners who are also out there trying to understand how they can play a role in this, what is one small step toward advancing fairness in health that you would suggest?
Well, when I was teaching, I would often end the semester or end the quarter encouraging students to be explicit about how they are defining terms. And for anyone engaging in this work, always being explicit about how you are defining terms, and don't assume that everyone around the table shares your definition. Encourage yourself to be more introspective about the pathway that leads to health disparities, to perhaps uncover any hidden biases you might have about what causes differences in health outcomes across populations. So I would say those two things are small steps that individuals can take. Those are important aspects.
I'm Ashley Freeman, and thanks for listening to this episode of Advocates in Action. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. We enjoy connecting with our listeners, so please visit our website for show notes, resources, and ways to engage with us on social media. Thanks for listening.